Ladies and gentlemen, what's going on? Welcome to episode 169 of the It's Obvious Gaming Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Preston Pugh, and I'm joined by my two best friends, Garrett Drake.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And Jacob Alka.
169.
Yeah, man! I was going to say, I know that joke is just so beaten into the ground, and it's definitely dead.
What do you mean? I just came up with it.
Yeah. Yeah, just kidding, man. I haven't heard that one before either, but I was going to say, you know, you might as well celebrate the 69 because it's only going to happen every 100 episodes, and it's been 100 episodes since our last celebration, 69. So might as well give it a little little tip of the hat, you know, because it's a classic number to land on when you're doing a podcast or really anything that's numbered for that matter. So here's to you, 69.
Here's to you.
Cheers.
How are you guys?
I'm great. Go ahead, Jacob.
No, I was just going to say I'm great. Very refreshed. Got some good sleep last night. We were all here remotely, which is strange. None of us are actually seeing each other.
I was going to say we've made history. There's a lot of weight to this podcast. We've made history 2 weeks in a row. Last week, Jacob joined us remotely for the first time, and we were at Preston's house recording. Now, this week, we are all in our own separate homes recording remotely, like Jacob mentioned. So, no video once again, of course. If we were doing a Google Hangout, I guess we could have done that. But hopefully, we'll be back together here in the near future. I'm starting to question whether the video version is even worth it at this point. Obviously, it'll always go on YouTube regardless. But if you guys even give a mere shite about the video version of the podcast, let us know and we'll keep doing it. But, if it's totally useless, then we won't do it anymore. But it's good to be here with you guys remotely. It is 11:52 a.m. I have coffee in hand, and I couldn't be more excited to talk about video games, and specifically Spider-Man spoilers, which we will get to, and I will have linked, I promise, in the description and pinned in the comments below.
Wait, that's so you're going to spoil the whole game for everyone, Garrett?
Yeah, man. It's about time. Yeah. We're actually late to the party of the spoiler talk.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, are we saving that for the end? So if they don't, you know.
Yeah, we won't dabble in that. So because Jacob only has an hour with us, or a little less than an hour at this point, so we'll talk about everything else we have to say, and then you and I will jump neck deep into that. We'll swing into the spoilers. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Cool, man.
Yeah, sorry, man. I'm so tired this morning. So I'm trying to wake up as I'm talking to you guys. But
I saw Chris Addison this morning.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Really?
I met him to drop off some amps that were his and another buddy of ours, and they're officially out of my hair. I have so much more space in my little office now, and I think I'm gonna bite the bullet. I'm gonna move my TV and PS4 over here. I'm gonna leave the footstool in my room because I need it to relax.
Mm. But
PS4 is coming over. It's gonna make the trip across the house.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Now you have a gaming room.
I do. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, that's really cool, Garrett. how's y'all's week been so far?
Just waiting to hear from Jacob.
Oh, I'll go. Sure. it's been a good week. It's been a good week. Been working my ass off this week. Been covering, or not covering, but I've been working harder. I did cover. What am I saying? Another guy, an employee of mine, went out of town, so I've been doing his deliveries, basically. And he has a lot more work than I do, and so I've been working just a little more, you know. So it's taking a little more of my time. Haven't been able to stream as much this week, which was a little disappointing, because I enjoy doing that. So we're going to get back, or I'm going to get back to that, back to the 4 days this coming week, so I'm excited to do that. But in other news, been playing Spider-Man, been playing Destiny 2. Been playing a little more WoW, and been playing Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery.
Jacob.
Still playing that stupid
game,
man.
You're a real piece of shit, Jacob.
I'm the problem. I'm not spending money on the game, but I'm just sitting here, and I'm playing this stupid game. I'm tapping on the screen to do activities.
Killing me, man. I get it, but you're killing me.
Yeah, I'm killing myself. Like, I don't know why I'm still playing. Like, I want to see where the story goes, but do I really? I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
I guess I just kind of like having something on my phone to occupy my time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think you're just a sucker for Harry Potter who needs a fix.
I am. I'm a big fanboy. Yeah. Let's be honest.
I'm more confident than ever that we're going to get that Harry Potter game we've always dreamed of after Spider-Man. I think many publishers are going to look at that as a prime example of what's possible with the IP they have laying at their disposal, and they're not going to blow it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Harry Potter is one of many IP that's going to see a revival in the video game space to the utmost degree.
I hope you're right, Garrett.
Yeah, me too, man.
We already got it. Hogwarts Mystery.
Yeah, Jacob's playing it, keeping it alive, man. We appreciate it.
What are you guys talking about? We got it. But I've also been, I'm almost caught up on My Hero Season 3. And it's really freaking good. I highly recommend you guys continue watching it. Yeah, it's just one of the best shows I've, honestly, one of the best animes I've ever seen. Not that I've seen a whole lot of them, but really keeping my attention right now. And I'm watching it every time I sit down to eat something.
So, wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to. I have several shows I need to catch up on.
Yeah, I plan to catch up on Attack on Titan after that because I'm like two seasons behind on that now.
I keep forgetting season three's out at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Same here. Every time I see the name Attack on Titan online or anything, I scroll super fast. So I just do not want to be spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the worst feeling.
Yeah. I had Spider-Man spoiled for me before I finished
it. You
did? Yeah, I did.
Aww.
But it wasn't like a massive spoiler. The spoiler was something I assumed was going to happen anyways. So it was just like, oh, I guess that's going to happen just like I thought.
Yeah, so. I think I'm like just starting to get into the juicy bits of Spider-Man. So I'm excited to play now. A little more than I was prior.
Yeah, for sure, man.
I'll be dabbling in that this evening. But that's about it for me, guys. That was my week.
Well, that's exciting. Garrett, how about you?
My week was solid. I started school, and I was very sad about it all week.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy any of my classes. Thankfully, one of my teachers he's one of those teachers that you have every few years in school that just blows your mind at how good of a teacher they are. Not only relaying the information they need to teach to you, but their method of teaching it. And their down-to-earth nature and personality that makes learning it interesting. And it is fascinating to see a teacher fill a position that was previously occupied by a different teacher who was truly awful at teaching. Very intelligent individual, but he's just an awful teacher. It's an amazing what a difference a single individual can make in the same position. And he made everything we had tried to learn previously for the last 2 years not only far more informative immediately, but just way more entertaining and awesome. So that's the one good thing about starting school back, but the other two classes, man, are just awful. Not learning a thing. All quarter, I can tell, but school's back, so my schedule is officially back in full swing. It's practically death-inducing. Just remarkably busy at all times. I will probably have very, very minimal time to stream this fall while I'm in school, unfortunately. I will stream here and there in the mornings when I can, but I just have so much on my plate between homework, schoolwork, and stuff I'm doing for COG. So, podcast will live on, of course, and whenever I have time, I'm going to squeeze in some Let's Play stuff. I may use mine and Preston's victory. I almost called it a victory royale. Our victory in Black Ops last night, Blackout. Which was actually a genuine win. It wasn't like a fluke or anything. Me and Preston won fair and square, and Blackout was very exciting.
How else would we win? Like the other
Yeah,
team
but that's the thing. I feel
something.
Like I've seen people win just by like goofs happening and stuff, and Blackout for not Blackout, but just Battle Royale in general, where you're like hiding somewhere, and the last two people kill themselves or kill each other, and you get the win. So I've seen stuff like that happen. We genuinely had a hard fought battle, and we succeeded, which was pretty cool. That was a highlight of the week for sure. Played some more Spider-Man, loved it. Still loving that game. I'm so excited for the DLC and New Game Plus in general. So that'll be cool. I'm trying to think of anything else I did outside of that. I started Tomb Raider. We'll talk about that in a bit, I guess. And yeah, that was my week. Pretty busy, but it was good.
That's great, man. Yeah, I finished up Spider-Man. I platinumed it about on Wednesday, and of course it was my you know, my dream come true. I couldn't have asked for I have probably just one critique that we talked about last night that I'll get into, but besides even that, it's just like whatever, just the overall package of the game was just insane. I loved it so much. We'll talk about that later. But then I got on to Rise of the Tomb Raider, as well as Blackout. I'll talk about Rise of the Tomb Raider a little bit before we get more into Blackout. But
you mean Shadow?
Oh yeah, Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Gosh, what it's just... I don't like the... That's one of my complaints. I don't like these titles they're using.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I like when people do that with titles, but I get where it can get confusing stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty much just more Tomb Raider with just more tombs. So I guess that's good for a Tomb Raider to have more tombs, I guess.
For sure.
They're longer tombs. I've done about 3 or 4 tombs, and for the most part, and I'm talking about like the optional challenge tombs. They are, very satisfying. They just, you know, make you feel, you know, smart when you complete them. I haven't been able to just like completely breeze through them. There was one that really stumped me, but I think I was stumped more because I couldn't like find something that was like in my face than the actual puzzle itself.
Mm-hmm.
I had to open these shutters for wind to blow in, and I stood there for an hour and couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do. But once I figured it out, it was like the easiest thing of all time. It was just staring me in the face. So that was the only one that really kept me up a little bit. But besides that, it's just fine. The combat is essentially the exact same. The only thing that's different is that you can cover yourself with mud and you can like attach yourself to these vine walls. And she just like whips out her knife and just looks very, very angry. And then you can just absolutely massacre people with this shank that you've made. There's a new you can like shoot them with an arrow and then pull them back, kind of like Connor in Assassin's Creed 3 with that rope dart thing. It's essentially so far those are the only two new combat things that are really notable. Maybe later on I'll get something else, but even in kind of like the Metroidvania sense where you see something, you're like, oh, I can come back to that. The only thing I've seen is, I need a shotgun to blow this door open, or, I need like a reinforced knife. Like so far I haven't seen anything that looks cool or different. Like, oh wow, I wonder how I'm going to get over that. You know what I mean? It just seems pretty straightforward. What else? The story so far is whatever. Laura starts the apocalypse and
no big deal.
No big deal. You like take this dagger and then you have to go find something else. The bad guy takes the dagger from you at the very beginning and he's trying to find like another piece to change the world for Trinity. Very, you know, just what you would expect from a Tomb Raider. So far, I do not like the main villain at all. He's super boring. I think his voice acting sucks. He's not intimidating in the slightest, like the dude in Rise of the Tomb. Not the guy in Rise of the Tomb Raider was intimidating, but at least like he was a villain. Like he kidnapped your stepmom. In quotation marks. And you actually felt like you had to, there was like urgency to like do stuff, which I know that's what's hilarious is like the apocalypse is happening and I don't feel any urgency in the story. The locations are very similar so far. It's just in the jungle. I'm pretty sure the entire game is just in the jungle, which is whatever. I kind of wish it would be more kind of globe-trotty like the old Tomb Raiders were, and kind of like Uncharted is. I'd like to see just a lot of, you know, varied environments in Tomb Raider.
So are the spaces, do they feel like as big and open as
They feel bigger than Rise. I've been in two hub areas so far, and they're pretty big. They're populated with a lot more people. There's like shops you go to. There's people that you can just go talk to. So it definitely feels bigger, and also the underwater segments are not just they're fully like open, not like in Rise how you just push one button to dive and you're like at one level underwater. It's full, you can fully explore the underwater, which is fine. I know nobody really likes underwater stuff that much, which is hilarious when developers like we've got full underwater like sections now. Like, yeah, everybody was asking.
I was thinking
for
about
that.
When, I imagine when they were pitching ideas for what they want to do for Shattered, like, where have we not taken Laura yet? Like, what's her final frontier? Like, oh, we've gone to the mountains, we've gone to the jungle. What can we do? They're like, let's put her deeper in the water.
Yeah.
That was like one of the main things they marketed, like go deeper with Laura this time around. And that's the thing, though. I will say, I don't think the swimming mechanics are bad at all. No. I think they're very responsive.
No, they're fine. Like, it's there's I saw in one review, I forgot who wrote it, maybe it was Kotaku or something, I read, where they were just going on and on about the underwater segments being like insanely hard, because there are, I've played through two already, but there are stealth segments underwater, and I thought it was a pretty funny comment. They were like, yeah, everybody loves that force stealth / underwater segment. That's what everybody was asking for. But they're super easy. There's just like eels and piranha underwater, and you just have to hide in some seaweed as they swim by, and then you swim past them. So it's not, they're not very long at all either. Like, you know, they're pretty quick. You can just get through them fairly easy.
What would you rather do, the MJ missions and Spider-Man, or the stealth underwater levels with Lara Croft?
Definitely the MJ missions for sure.
Okay.
All
right. Well, I'm not going to continue shouting now. Thanks.
The water missions are way shorter, and so far they're fewer than the MJ missions. So, crap, what else was I gonna say? Oh yeah, one of the main things, and granted I haven't gone in like immersive voice mode or whatever, so I guess that's my fault, but it is very distracting that I show up at this like ancient civilization and everybody's speaking perfect English. It's very just weird.
Yeah. I told you I turned on immersive voice acting for a bit, and I did like it a lot. I just wasn't in the mood to read a bunch of subtitles. Yeah. So I turned it off, but I think that's awesome that they have that option. I've always kind of wanted that in a game where you're in a foreign country, and that's very cool.
Yeah, and I understand that it's, you know, a game, and they want Laura to talk to these people, but it would just be cooler, in my opinion, if she couldn't talk to these people. Like, what if they needed to figure out a way to communicate, or through like exploration, Laura can somewhat become versed at the language and then attempt to talk. Just kind of like make that a gameplay dynamic. Yeah, I think that'd be cooler, and it would match.
Or she could have a translator.
Or that. Just something. It's just like Laura's just like talking perfect like English, and they're like, hey, what's up? What's up, guys? It's
been kicking it in the jungle for the last 4 decades.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And those people in the jungle, the voice acting is it's really bad. It's really bad. It's like after playing Spider-Man, where everybody just gives a pretty stellar performance, just the NPCs in this are just awful. Laura sounds good.
You know, I had a nice hoot
Jonah
sounds from
that kid good
at the beginning.
What's that? Oh yeah, there's a Jacob at the beginning of the game, for like apocalypse starts, and no spoil, this is like within the first 30 minutes, and you're like traversing through this city where a tsunami's happening, and there's this little kid hanging from a window, and he's literally going, "Mommy, don't let me fall, mommy," like just the most stereotypical Spanish accent of all time, just like "mommy," and then he falls. And dies.
Oh no.
I know, this little kid falls and dies, and
oh my god,
it's hilarious. It's just so funny because I was laughing, like this kid just fell off a building and I'm laughing because of how bad his voice acting was.
He's like, oh, oh!
It's really bad.
Oh man.
I've been looking at a few Steam discussions, like the forum in Steam, and there are some people, dude, saying that this is the best game they've ever seen graphically, and I don't understand at all. Like, the game looks fine. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fine. Like, Laura's character model looks, like, her face looks fantastic. Jonah looks fantastic. Everybody else just looks, like, the faces range from, like, spectacular to just the animations have always just been weird in the Tomb Raider games, like how she shimmies, how
she's also very floaty too, you can change direction with your leaps
in mid jump. Yeah, that's that just style. I know this is extreme nitpicking, but I just think it's a little ridiculous how when you switch weapons, the weapons on your back just disappear now. Like, I think that
drives me crazy too. Yeah,
it doesn't like affect the gameplay or anything, obviously, because the gameplay is fine. Like, the shooting and stuff is fine, but it is just weird seeing a game nowadays where like your weapons are just disappearing and stuff. And in a game that's supposed to be like super immersive like this. But yeah, those are kind of like the only things I can really remember right now. There were a few texture problems that were really weird with an outfit I was wearing. Like, they had these little frilly things on her arms and they were super pixelated and like weren't even connected to her shirt, but I restarted the game and that fixed it. So I guess that's not a big deal. Again, relating to Spider-Man, all the optional outfits I've had for Laura, there's just weird clipping and problems with it. And after having just played Spider-Man, where like literally every single costume you wear in that game is like flawless, like it looks absolutely insane and perfect pretty much. Yeah. It's just very noticeable. And playing this on, like, you know, I was playing it in 4K, but I got a few dips, so I'm just playing it in 2160 with just everything maxed out. And I think it, you know, the picture is not as sharp, but just graphically it looks better. So that's how I'm playing it right now. But even with it like maxed out, I still think like Spider-Man graphically looks better than this game. And I'm sure that has to do with just the dev time and stuff. Like, Shadow of the Tomb Raider probably didn't take as... honestly, like, if we're going to be honest here, Shadow, this game feels like... just like, we need to put out another Tomb Raider game. Like, it just doesn't feel like they added a whole lot. And I hate the whole, like, oh, this is like 2.5, or this is just an expansion to Rise of the Tomb Raider. But it kind of does feel like that in a way. I know I've been ragging on a little much, but I do enjoy the Tomb Raider games, the Rise and stuff. And this one is... This one is good. This one is good. If you liked Rise and just the two rebooted games, then I would suggest at some point you pick it up. I don't think it's not good enough to like, dude, you gotta play this game right now. Yeah. But if later on you're interested, or if it's on sale or something, then I would recommend it then. But yeah, I think
that's what I might wait for, is, you know, a sale, or it's, you know, somewhere down the road where I want to chip something off my backlog. I'll probably do that, because I do want to. I'm assuming this is the conclusion of her story. I mean, I don't know.
That's what
it's the I've end of heard. The beginning.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I have a good feeling about the future of that franchise, though, for real.
Yeah, I think they need to kind of just take a break, maybe a little bit. Crystal Dynamics is working on the Avengers stuff. Eidos Montreal needs to go back to Deus Ex.
Yeah, hopefully.
And then they can kind of regroup and then come back and really make like the big sequel to the Tomb Raider franchise.
I know you and I talked about it briefly on the phone the other night, Preston, but Jacob, what Preston and I were saying, if they took a 4 to 5 year break, I think that'd be plenty of time for Lara Croft to kind of literally fall back into the shadows, and then when she has her reemergence, people will be genuinely excited. It can be a true next gen Lara Croft adventure that I think could be globetrotting. You can go back to the old school way, but every time you globetrot, it's that big next open area to explore and do tombs, blah 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 blah. Open area we've had in the previous games, just in a different environment every time, like the snowy place, the desert place, the forest, I don't know, all kinds of different environments you can mix together, and then really maybe start from the ground up, maybe a new engine and add some more mechanics and new animations and blah, 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 blah. And you really could bring it if they had enough development time and have enough time to plan to release it in a window where it is not affected by anything else like the previous three games. Because I feel like this franchise has not had the time and release window it's deserved to really shine. And like, people recognize the good qualities, but obviously there are a lot of things holding it back. But like you and I talked about, Preston, if they had that development time unhindered, where no one's rushing it out the door and not forcing it into a spot that's surrounded by games that are going to eat it alive, I think it really could be outstanding. So hopefully like they say, this is the end of the beginning of her story. I hope they take all the time they need to really launch her into the next gen with the time she deserves, because I think it could be truly awesome.
I agree. Yeah.
I think part of the reason why I liked the original remaster of the first version, or the first game that Crystal did, was because of it came out when there was nothing else to play on the Xbox, right?
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it back then. But you know, as the series has gone on, you know, obviously more and more games are coming out on the current gen consoles and whatnot. So it does seem like it got, you know, just overshadowed by so many other games throughout its life cycle.
Yeah, and I was telling Garrett about this too earlier, is that Square has been really weird about sales figures for Tomb Raider. Like, they're always disappointed with the sales, even though it does fairly well. But I just, Lord knows how good this game is going to sell just with the time it came out and just kind of the, you know, the response that it's getting. It's not getting, and I want to reiterate, it's by no means a bad game. Like, these issues I'm bringing up are just whatever. They don't make the game, like, necessarily, like, less fun. They're just, like, little things that would really just, like, put it over the edge and, like, you know, help the immersion factor and stuff like that. Like, the gameplay is fine. It's just, you know, like I said, just Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is solid. But
I mean the problem, like, nowadays is that games need to be really good
to
garner the attention that they need to make their money back. Yeah. And you know, that's really hard to do.
There's so many incredible games coming out that if you're just a really good game, you kind of just, you know, like, fall flat, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, and I'll just be interested to see Square's response to the sales for Shadow. Just like I said, with the time it coming out, nobody's really, like, you know, dancing in the streets about Shadow. So, like, if it doesn't sell well, they'll be like, oh, well, I guess nobody cares about Tomb Raider. Like, I hope that's not the case. It's just like, man, you guys have put this game out at just horrible times, you know, back with Rise and Shadow. And y'all kind of, you know, like Garrett said, kind of just need to take a break and really, like, make the next game, like, a big, like, evolution of the series. So
I'd like to see a little older too, not like an old lady, but like more mature in her years. And I had a diehard Tomb Raider fan on COG's team I went to with PAX, who really knows her character very well. And she says she misses a Lara Croft who's actually genuinely excited to be a Tomb Raider and enjoyed what she was doing. Whereas the past three games, she seems sort of like, not necessarily that she doesn't enjoy it, but she's always a little, obviously a darker take on the character, and she's always in these harrowing situations, and of course she always have bad guys to fight.
Yeah.
But she wants to see the personality of Lara, where she's loving what she's doing at all times. Mm-hmm. Almost like Nathan Drake-esque, but the Lara Croft version of that. And I think it'd be kind of cool if she's advanced in her years and she's been all over the place, and then her next adventure she's more positive and has, like, a good time in spite of having to deal with Trinity or whoever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, the entire focus of the games is, like, or at least Rise and Shadow, is Trinity. I have to go stop Trinity.
Yeah,
like, that I'm going to the tombs to stop Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. So, you know, there is doesn't feel like she's, like, doing
maybe
it for the love of it.
Sort of like in the first game out, all that is thrust upon her. Maybe in her next adventure she's tomb raiding purely for enjoyment, and she just happens to run into a problem and she decides to solve it while she's at it. And it doesn't have to be, like, a world-changing event. It could just be a cool adventure in the life of Lara Croft. Like, I love smaller contained stories like that. And it could be just her helping out, like, a local society somewhere that she stumbled upon. I don't know.
Yeah,
but if it wants to be globetrotting, I guess it kind of has to be related to, like, a grander adventure.
Yeah, there's got to be, like, goons to fight and a villain. I understand. So, I mean, that's, I don't really care about, or I don't know about, the way that she is now is honestly fine with me, not being a massively, you know, Lara Croft fan. So,
It's so easy to hype people up too if they take the time they need to develop it, like we said. But the reveal demo could be her in her classic outfit, maybe like a slightly reimagined classic outfit with dual wielding pistols, like brand new shooting mechanics that are just totally awesome. That could get people so hyped if they did that.
I agree. Well, so that's Shadow. You guys want to talk about Blackout real quick before Jacob has to head off?
Yeah, let's do it.
I know me and Garrett were able to play both in the PS4. We played the PS4 beta and the PC beta. Actually, did we talk about the PS4 beta last week? So I guess I'm going to disregard that. Yeah, we played it all three of us played in the PC beta last night. I guess we're probably, well, we have a lot of things we're going to say. I guess we probably said about the PS4 as well, but I don't think Jacob really gave his insight on the PS4 beta. So, Jacob, what are you thinking about the PC beta?
So, initial thoughts, the gunplay feels like Call of Duty, which is a major plus. That's always been, well, it hasn't been like my biggest gripe with PUBG, but it was never really there in terms of the gameplay for me. And it just didn't, like it doesn't feel like Call of Duty, basically. And, like, I've always been a huge fan of how Call of Duty feels. And to have a giant sandbox to now be able to do that and drop in with where it stands right now, 88 other people, and try and get that chicken dinner or whatever the hell it's called, it's really satisfying to me.
It's called a victory.
Yes, a victory. It's really fun, Treyarch. Good job. But, yeah, the game is a blast. I have yet to get a win, unlike you guys. I got disconnected from that match, unfortunately, which happened several times that night. But, you know, it's a beta. It happens. But the game is so much fun. The vehicles control fine. I know they've been pushing the vehicles a lot in terms of marketing the game, and I don't know how, like, important they're really going to be. Like, the only time I ever get in one is when I need to get away from the fucking zone, you know, and I need to escape. Because I always find it more strategic to actually not be on vehicles because you're not making all that noise. I think the guns, they shoot fine. Haven't really come across a gun that's a problem or is overpowered or anything. I think the armor is still a little too, especially the level 3, I think it's still a little too much. I don't know, just sometimes it feels like when you shoot guys, they just don't die. Like, you just put so many bullets into someone and these, I don't know, it just seems ridiculous sometimes. I know it's still early and they're still making tweaks, but it just feels very odd to me in that regard. But other than that, I think it's already a very fun experience. I'm kind of interested to see how they're going to, like, you know, because you know they're going to put microtransactions in this in some way. And I'm wondering, like, what they're going to do exactly. Like, are they going to go the Fortnite route, or where they're just going to put a shit ton of skins in the game? And, you know, they're going to charge us the $60 to buy the game, and they're going to charge us for skins. I don't really know. That's just me kind of thinking ahead. Mm-hmm. But I did really enjoy the beta. It's a lot of fun. What about you guys?
No, I enjoyed it as well. I don't have really anything to add on from what I said last week about the PS4 version, besides I like, you know, playing with keyboard and mouse, you know, more.
Yeah.
I do better.
I love the field of view.
Yeah, the auto aim is like insane. I know you can turn it off in the console version, but then it puts you at like a massive disadvantage to people, you know, that have it on. But there are just some situations when there's like two or three guys and you just try and shoot at them, and just the gravitation towards, you know, somebody you're not trying to shoot at is just massive. Yeah. On console. So it's nice to just be able to aim, you know, really good on PC.
Definitely need to make some upgrades to my computer before I get that game, because I'm running it on medium right now to get the most frames at the moment. So it's kind of dampening my experience a little bit. So I definitely want to upgrade.
Like, in what way? Just because it doesn't look good?
Yeah, just graphically.
I mean, I can tell you, graphically maxed out, it's not really a looker.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is pretty ugly.
Yeah. Like, I've watched other people's experiences playing the game, and it just looks a little better than mine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not like, it's not going to look how the multiplayer is going to look, for example.
Yeah. I mean, it's
the regular.
You know, it's a really big map. They want it to run smooth and stuff. So that's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But, Garrett, how about you?
Aside from everything else we talked about, I think the armor system has grown on me a lot. What I love about it is that, you know, I mentioned already one of the reasons I'm attracted to Black Ops 4 is that the firefights, even in general multiplayer, last longer than before. So you actually feel like a little more it feels a little more rewarding to win firefights in this game, especially in Blackout, where they've added really brutal armor with the multiple tiers. And it makes you think twice about engaging in a fight, which I think is very exciting and actually adds weight to your decisions in the game. So I like for example, last night when you had died, I snuck up on some guys and I basically knew I was going to die. But of course, it is possible to win 2-on-1 fights or 3-on-1 fights if you're smart about it. But I like the fact that you can actually feel horrified for your life in spite of however much gear you might have if you're outnumbered. So fights are genuinely exciting and called in Blackout specifically. And that's what I loved about our final fight last night and our victory we got is that Preston and I were on a hill in the second to last circle, I believe. And it was 2-on-2 and we knew there were two guys out there. And we were pretty sure they were to the north because we could hear shots and they had dealt with the last squad before or the last duo before us. So I remembered, I was like, oh man, I have a recon car. I'll just drive it over there and see if I can find them. And lo and behold, I drive it over there and I find them on a hill right where we expected them to be. And they shoot the recon car. I'm like, all right, I know where they are. So we make our way over to the final circle as the force field's collapsing. And we engage in this awesome fight that lasts for at least a few minutes. And I managed to kill one of their guys behind a tree up on a hill with it. We both had snipers, thankfully, really powerful snipers. And we killed the one guy, and I tried flanking the second guy, and he managed to down Preston and ended up down a hill. And long story short, we ended up killing him in this epic fight at the end. But it was just super cool. It was a normal Call of Duty match like back in the day. You know, you'd shoot someone and they die instantly. And if it were like that in Blackout, I feel like it wouldn't be as exciting. But the reason that everyone lasts that long and fights makes it really cool. And that win felt very satisfying because of that. So I really like it. At first, I thought the armor was a little much, and I still think it might just be a tiny bit much. I think if I dialed it back just slightly, like we talked about, I think it'd be the sweet spot. But I really do have a lot of fun with it, man. I mean, I always really enjoyed PUBG. I never really got into Fortnite. I get the appeal, but it never grabbed me like PUBG did. I think I just prefer the more grounded, realistic approach, even though in a lot of ways those games are unrealistic. But you know what I mean? The more militarized version of Battle Royale, I think, is pretty cool. And to play a near perfect experience like PUBG, mechanically speaking, is just very cool and very exciting. And like Preston said, it feels very familiar. So it's fun in that sense. And playing with you guys is a lot of fun. And I look forward to the full release because I'm genuinely stoked for Black Ops 4 and Blackout is killing it. Well, yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say. But everything you guys said, I echo entirely. So.
Well, but that's really cool.
Totally, man. Jacob, how much time do you have?
I could give you another probably 10 minutes.
All right, cool. You want to bring us up to speed on the Nintendo Direct? I have a couple of bullet points, like I mentioned, but I figured I'd just let you guys go from what you know real quick.
Well, I'm pulling up the list of what they announced because I'm having trouble remembering some of them.
All right, cool.
I remember Animal Crossing got announced, just like that's
yeah.
the big,
yeah.
obviously
that
the
was
big,
the big
thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That well, Luigi's Mansion 3, I didn't even know there was a Luigi's Mansion 2, if I'm being honest.
I think it's on like 3DS.
Interesting.
Yeah, I watched the entire Direct, and those are like the only things I remember, that and like the online service.
You got it pulled up, Jacob?
Working on it. Tried a link and didn't get what I wanted.
In the meantime,
riveting stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say Rocksteady is hiring for next gen, according to an article from GameSpot. Still have no clue what they're developing. It could be any number of things. Part of me hopes it's Batman because I still think they can do more with Batman. But at the end of the day, even if WB Montreal takes on another Batman game, I'm down for that. But whatever they're doing, they're planning for something special. That's for sure. According to all the stuff I've been reading.
It's probably going to be like some like crazy puzzle game or something.
Yeah, call me selfish, man, but for some reason I have issues, but I don't know if I'm interested in seeing an original IP from Rocksteady yet. I think I just am so craving more Batman from them that I'm insane. But I know I imagine they're more than capable of developing an original IP, but at the same time, you got to imagine you got to consider their success with the Batman franchise and what WB's willing to let them do. I feel like at this point, with all their success, they deserve to create their own IP. But I don't know if they're going to remain in DC like we've talked about or what. At the end of the day, Preston, what would you rather them do? Superman, Batman, or something totally original?
Yeah, I'd like to see them try Superman, because I just have no clue how to make a good Superman game. And I'd like to just see some really competent people try and make one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know we've talked about it before, but just how do you make a game with a dude with that much strength and the ability to fly everywhere and just kill everything literally in like one punch with, I guess, oh, I've got kryptonite in me and I'm not strong now. Like, I just want to see just somebody's take on how to make a game like that. How about you? Or,
no, I agree.
You said Batman. I'd be fine with Batman. If it is Batman, I'd like to see like a really interesting take, like maybe Batman Beyond or something like that. Just like
I'd be down for that, yeah, for sure.
A new type of thing.
Almost feel like that'd be perfect, considering, well, that's the thing though, because remember at the end of Arkham Knight, spoilers for Arkham Knight if you haven't played it, but everyone finds out Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Uh-huh.
And he activates the what do you call it? The Knight Protocol, something protocol.
Yeah. I remember getting the actual ending after you 100% it, and I remember like I don't even honestly remember. It was like he used like Scarecrow grass or something and turned into a big bat thing and flew at somebody.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on YouTube.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know what that means.
I would like to see a grizzled old Kevin Conroy Batman again with Terry McGinnis, or maybe an original take on Batman Beyond. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that'd be really awesome.
Jacob, how we do it?
I got it. Let's know.
All right, cool.
So is the Luigi's Mansion, is that? Yeah, it's Switch. Okay.
Yeah.
I am excited for that. I played the first one somewhat, and I want to play this one a lot. I feel like Luigi's always been, you know, always been in Mario's shadow. He deserves a game like this on the Switch. So I'm excited to see how it turns out. There's a lot of stuff announced for the 3DS. I'm not going to really mention it because who cares? but new Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe coming to the Switch. So that's basically, I'm guessing, a remaster of the Wii U games, Super Mario and Super Luigi U. You guys going to pick that up? It's coming out in January.
No.
Yeah, I probably won't either. But it is there for those who want it. They talked a lot about their online service launching, I think, is it this coming week at some point? It's September 18th, so whenever that is.
I believe
I will not be getting it, but those who like playing NES games will certainly have something to somewhere to play them now, for sure. And also, they announced alongside that the NES-style controllers. How do you guys feel about those controllers?
They look cool. Did you hear that you have to be a member of the online service to even order them?
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can't just go buy them. You have to have an account, like a Nintendo Online account, I believe.
That's so weird.
To purchase those from Nintendo, yeah.
That is so strange.
And it's only one, you can only buy one set per account. So I guess that's to, like,
fuck, man.
I guess that's to, you know, prevent scalpers or something.
Nintendo is so strange.
Yeah.
But, I think they look cool. They look a little, like, dinky, but they're cool.
For $60, that seems better to me.
Yeah, oh, I mean,
top
how
notch.
Much are Joy-Cons? Are they 50?
80.
Wait, they're 80?
Yeah, for a full set of Joy-Cons, $80.
What? Okay. Game Freak is also making a new RPG for the Switch called Town, working title.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see any gameplay for this?
I did.
Looks fine.
Just stick to Pokemon, guys. Come on.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
City Skylines is coming to the Switch the day that the Direct went live. Civ 6 is coming to the Switch. And I was looking through all that. Oh, they had a bunch of Final Fantasy news. They're pouring a lot of remasters to the Switch, which is kind of cool for Final Fantasy fans. Isabelle from Animal Crossing is coming to Smash Bros. Ultimate, which is cool, I guess. And then to wrap it all up, it was Animal Crossing announcement for 2019.
Yep.
I think that was about it. I feel like I'm missing something, but I don't...
I think I'm lying to myself because I'm excited for Animal Crossing, but I don't know if I actually am.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to get into Animal Crossing again as much as I adore the original.
Yeah, I tried to in New Leaf, and I kind of, just in that game, you know, you kind of just run out of stuff to do. I mean, I don't think it's a game you're supposed to play for like 30 hours on end. It's just like you kind of play it daily, kind of do your chores and, you know, put it up. And I just don't know, you know, if I'm really, like Garrett said, if I'm really up for a game like that nowadays.
Yeah.
Like I was when I was a kid. But we'll see. Maybe they'll implement like a quest system in combat in this next one. It'll keep me engaged.
Yeah, that's what it needs desperately.
Yeah.
That may be a web swinging system to traverse the open world.
Exactly. That's what we need. But yeah, pretty solid direct, I would say.
Yeah.
I enjoy these.
I think they talked a little bit about Pokemon too, but nothing major there.
Yeah, I think just the EV and Pikachu.
Yeah. They did announce the new console, I guess. A new bundle.
People call them the Poop and Pee Joy-Cons.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Poop and Pee.
The Smash Brothers Ultimate Switch looks dope. Like, that thing looks insanely cool.
I think the Joy-Cons look stupid. There's just lines on them.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I like the... I'm talking about the dock itself. That thing looks awesome.
The original 8 cast, it looks awesome. I agree. I'm not going to get it, but I admire it.
No.
Well, really you guys going to pick it up Smash this fall or this winter?
Nah, dude.
No?
No, I'm just... Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't we?
I don't know. I don't know if you guys are into Smash. We never talk about it.
Yeah, I'm into, especially on Switch, for sure.
Yeah, that's, I can't wait to kick y'all's ass, man.
Yeah, good one, pal.
Yeah, dude.
Assassin's Creed 3's remaster is coming bundled with one of the editions of Odyssey.
That's cool.
It's kind of cool, I guess.
That's really cool. I think also the Liberty Age, the Vita game that was remastered.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I saw that was in the Seasons Pass or bundled with one of the games as well.
You gotta wonder why they went with Assassin's Creed 3 out of all the ones they could have remastered. I mean, I like 3 a lot, but I wonder why they went with that one.
Because we already got the whole Ezio trilogy.
That's true.
So
I imagine the original's pretty dated.
Yeah.
It probably didn't age too well.
Yeah.
So yeah, 3 is probably a good middleman, and I feel like 4 would be useless because it didn't come out that long ago, and especially because in Odyssey there's a lot of ship battle stuff going on.
Yep.
In addition to
how
the
dare you use useless and AC4 in the same sentence?
Yeah, a useless remaster.
Useless in the sense is I can already buy that on modern consoles.
Yeah,
true.
Assassin's Creed 3.
I remember.
I like
sorry to interrupt. I remember like the hype of Assassin's Creed 3. Like maybe it was just like our group of friends or something. But I just remember everyone being so pumped for that game. And then
I was very excited
too. It just didn't perform like people thought it would.
I think it did. I think just critically there were a lot of people that didn't like it as much. But
I was satisfied with it.
I liked it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one of my like nitpicks, just like with Tomb Raider, that stood out a ton to me when I first played it, is the first time you fight as Connor. You're like at Achilles, I think that's his name. You're at his house and you're still like a teenager and you get ambushed and you're doing like hidden blade finishers, but you haven't even got the hidden blade yet.
Yeah.
You're just like stabbing people with like an air blade. And
an air blade.
Yeah. And even back when I played it back then, that bugged me a little bit. But I did really like the, as easy as it was, visually was very cool looking in that game.
It was.
And the animations were very, very pretty. Like Connor's just run and traversal. I thought those animations were great. Story missions, very underwhelming. Like, remember that massive, like, open field mission with, like, all the cannons and stuff?
Yeah.
So lame, dude. Man, they could have had so and like
wasn't that like a big war?
Yeah, it was, but it's just like you ran from rock to rock, and then
and then you climb like a flagpole and assassinate their general or whatever.
General Lee.
Yeah, but I think that was the main thing with the game. That was very like the combat and the traversal and the open world was really, really good. It was just the actual main missions you did were very underwhelming.
Yeah.
For the most part. There were cool, like, I think there was one where, like, a city was burning or, like, a ship was burning and you kind of parkoured through it. That was pretty cool. But for the most part, very underwhelming.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the Native American bits of it. I enjoyed, like, that whole... their, you know what I mean? Like, just the aesthetic of being in the forest. And it was just a new take on Assassin's Creed, and I enjoyed it.
I agree. Well, I'm very excited for Odyssey, though. That comes out October 5th, I think. Very soon.
Yep. So this might be a good time for me to step out, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, get out of here, man.
So, Garrett, what do I need to do? I need to save my audio file.
Yeah, you just, you'll stop it, and then you'll save it to your desktop, and then upload it, or you gotta export it, too. I'll help you deal with that after we wrap up. I'll call or text you about it.
Okay, yeah, I'll just save it for now.
Alrighty, sir.
All right. Bye, Jake.
You guys, see you later.
Bye-bye.
See you, dude.
Alright, now that loser's gone.
Dude, I hate Jacob so much, man. It's not even funny.
What an idiot.
Yeah, he's so stupid.
Whew, just had to get through that. Now we're good.
Yep. Freedom at last. Gosh.
Yes, sir. Any more stories before we hop into Spider-Man?
I can still hear you guys, bro.
Oh, what, dude? We're just figuring out some notes.
Oh, okay.
Jacob, did you stop recording?
No, I'm still
okay.
All right, I'm actually leaving now.
All right, see you.
All right, bye. All right, Garrett. Anything else before we get into Spider-Man?
No, there probably are other news stories, but I didn't really mark them down. They must not have been too significant, so it's all good.
Yeah, sorry. Let's get into Spider-Man. I guess you can pretty much just leave the podcast now and then just come back at a later date when you finished, because I think this will probably take up the remainder of the podcast. Just was complete spoiler discussion. So Garrett, I guess I'll let you take it from here. Like, how do you even want to start? I guess since we're spoiler discussion, I guess mainly we'll just talk about the story details and kind of what we thought about the interesting or different takes that they made with these characters and just the ending, the villain motivations, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, let's start with the true spoilers at the end of the game regarding certain characters, because I know you mentioned in all the spoiler cast you've listened to, myself included, to an extent, you're disappointed with the actual spoiler talk, per se. Because when Brian's on these podcasts, as entertaining, as enjoyable as they are, and insightful they are in terms of the development process of the entire game, they seem to spend minimal time on the spoilers themselves. Mm-hmm. So let's really get deep into those, and then we'll talk about the other stuff after that. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay, first major spoiler, you want to start with... I guess people consider this a spoiler. We hadn't discussed it, obviously, the fact that you can play as Miles Morales and his father does end up dying toward the beginning of the game. I think it's towards the end of the first act, his dad dies.
Yeah, and a suicide bombing.
Yeah. I really liked, I can't remember his dad's name because I'm not an expert on Miles Morales' character.
Something Davis or?
Yeah, Officer Davis. Because I know, from what I know of the character, his father and his mother and his father, I believe, still play a significant role in his life when he's Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
So that's a deviation for sure from the original source material. But I was kind of disappointed in his death. It didn't like annoy me or anything, but I was bummed because I really, really liked him as a character.
Yeah.
And that mission working with him was really cool. And that was a pretty intense moment too, that like terrorist attack essentially with Mr. Negative.
Yeah, very, you know.
This is probably the darkest
dark
part of the game.
Dark thing to see in a Spider-Man game is a suicide bombing.
So... But I definitely didn't expect to play as Miles at that part. I still stand by the fact, after beating the game, loving everything about it, doing everything you can possibly do, I still don't see the absolute necessity to play as those characters. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I totally get what they're going for, and I get what Brian says when he says, you know, it's a nice change of pace. You know, you're Spider-Man going 100% the whole time. It's fast-paced and intense. It's a nice change of pace. I get that completely, but I think the game's so well-developed and the Spider-Man mechanics are so good that I'm fine with playing that 24/7, and taking a break was actually kind of a bummer for me. And the silver lining to me being bored in those gameplay sequences was I could totally understand Mary Jane and Miles more, what they were going through, who they were as individuals, what their motivations were. And it helped me, literally placing you in their shoes helps you identify with them more and understand them more and appreciate them more in the story and adds more weight to their character. So I understand why they're there, but I didn't enjoy them in spite of all that. So those sequences kind of bored me. I like what you said about the final Mary Jane mission was pretty cool, because, which I don't want to jump around too much. I guess we'll get to that in a minute, but
yeah,
her final mission was pretty good.
Yeah, there were one mission per Miles and Mary Jane that I actually enjoyed. I thought the Miles going to get medicine, having to escape from Rhino was pretty
and
cool.
Everything.
Yeah,
that was cool.
And then the final Mary Jane mission in Norman Osborn's penthouse, just the stealth. That was the first time that they kind of like let the rope off of you in a stealth section, where you kind of had, you know, like two full. I know that's funny. Like, you had a full room to like sneak through, but yeah, it wasn't as
yeah, two different paths you could take.
Yeah, it didn't feel as on rails as the previous sections of the game. But I liked exploring the penthouse and, you know, going into Harry's room and you know, reading things in there, looking at like the TV in there, and Mary Jane talk about how, you know, Harry and Peter and her used to, you know, watch TV in there and stuff. Just kind of getting more backstory on these characters in this universe we really don't know anything about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
a lot of world building in those missions that I liked, especially the latter half of both Miles and Mary Jane. And like what you said, to cycle back to Miles for a second with the Rhino mission, it definitely makes not only that villain, obviously, but the world feel much bigger. I like what they say, but oh, you're a normal person in a world full of superheroes. And it really did feel that way, sneaking around as just being totally helpless as Miles.
Uh-huh.
And again, I just like being in the presence of those villains is just cool, which we'll talk about their boss battles here in a bit too. But it made the world feel bigger, which I really liked a lot. That's what they really nail, is you really get a sense of the history of that world. And there's still so much more to learn about these characters and where they've been with specific events in their past. But yeah, the world just feels very big and well established and lived in, which I really, really liked a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's a nice transition into talking about Harry in particular. How do you feel about the direction they've taken with his character?
What character you cut out?
Harry Osborn.
Oh, I think it's not. It's definitely different than what I thought it was going to be. Obviously, they mislead you. Well, Norman misleads everybody. I forget if it's Norman or Harry. I guess Harry told everybody too that he was, you know, on a trip to Europe, but you know, he's been in New York the entire time, undergoing, you know, experimental treatment for this disease that his mom and he has. I don't think that's correct grammar, but whatever. This disease that Norman's been trying his entire life to, you know, this, gosh, I cannot talk right now, dude. You know what I'm saying? Harry has this disease.
He's been trying to find a cure for it.
Yeah,
his entire
exactly.
life.
And that entire cure is, you know, like the main thing, you know, the story, this devil's breath that, is essentially like a bioweapon. That was actually used to make, you know, Mr. Negative. So he's definitely way more important, I guess, to the story than you think, you know, throughout the game. But the only, you know, you don't even get to interact with him, but the only things you really do for him are those side missions with those research development centers. What did you think about what they did with him?
It was a cool reveal. I will say, like I said, the main path of the story never surprised me at all. I mean, Miles became or was bitten by a spider like I expected. Not necessarily the way he was bit by the spider, but I knew that was coming. I think we predicted Doc Ock was going to be Harry's mentor, the guy he was working with before the game even came out.
Yeah,
if it wasn't Dr. Connors, it was clearly Otto.
And that's the thing, is like, I'm not like, oh, I called that because I'm smart. It's just like, I thought it was pretty obvious when he's like, oh, he's a scientist. And like the Sinister Six is in the game. Like, oh, well, he's probably working for Octavius. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And when I say we predicted most of it, and none of it was unpredictable. That's not a bad thing at all, because I loved every moment of it. I thought it was excellent. It's one of the best Spider-Man stories I think I've ever seen. And I haven't read many of the comics at all, so I can't attest to any of the comic lines.
Mm-hmm.
But But in terms of the movies I've seen and some of the TV shows I've seen, it's definitely one of the best Spider-Man stories I've seen. And just the portrayal of Doc Ock and all that. But I'm trying not to bounce around too much. We'll focus on Harry for now. Mm. So that was definitely a surprise to see him. It was a surprise sneaking around Osborn's little penthouse and discovering that Harry had been sick and he had been taken care of in his bedroom. And there's like a hospital bed in there and stuff. It was even more of a surprise when you find out he wasn't, in fact, in Europe being cured or treated, but he was, like you said, in New York, still in that chamber where Norman walks up to him at the end. And people think it may be the symbiote as it, you know, shoots out from Harry and attacks the glass where Norman's standing.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe it's the symbiote. Maybe
it does look like a symbiote.
That or some sort of Green Goblin disease, like in Amazing Spider-Man 2. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I'm sure that's kind of like the disease it's hinting at is like something that does that. But they said he was going off to Europe for treatment. And maybe that's the symbiote. Maybe that they're using that as an experimental
that
treatment.
To try to cure him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I mean, I think you said in some comic line or some universe somewhere Harry is Venom.
Yeah, there that does exist. I can't name what it is, but I saw that in either a video or read about it just recently.
Yeah, I think that
so they
would
could be going that direction.
I think that would be freaking awesome. Now I can't imagine. Now let's say that is a thing. Like let's say Harry becomes Venom. Who is going to be? You can't have Spider-Man without. I mean, I guess you can, but like, I'd be shocked if there isn't a Green Goblin at some point. Like, is Norman going to be Green Goblin? Right.
That's a good question. I mean, they hint at Norman's tech to be Green Goblin multiple times.
Yeah.
And even like paraphernalia around his apartment and stuff.
I mean, you saw those bombs.
Nods.
Those bombs, hand grenades in his thing. They're the Green Goblin grenades. They're purple and everything.
Yeah. He even has the helmet, like the prototype helmet that Mary Jane puts on that can see structures that can be damaged or that are weak.
Mm-hmm.
And even has those goblin, like exotic goblin masks from history that are in his apartment kind of spread out and everything. So all the nods are there.
Powers? That's what I was.
It may be an attempt to, I mean, they could go any number of ways. It may be an attempt to, let's say Harry does indeed become Venom and Norman obviously will feel personally responsible for that. So maybe he takes these performance enhancing drugs like he does in the Spider-Man movie to try to become physically stronger to deal with him. It's like, oh, I'll use my grenades in an armored suit I've created and unintentionally becomes the Green Goblin. I don't know. And it's hard to predict who the main villain of the next game will
or
be.
What if he figures out a way to just make himself like super strong or something like that?
Yeah, it could be something like that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like too how, and like we discussed even before we heard Brian himself say it, and he's like, people have been asking where the black suit is. He's like, there's a reason it's not in there. And you and I had mentioned, like, I bet they're saving it for a big moment in the probably a future game. They would throw that in DLC. I'm excited. If they made their original Spider-Man costume look as cool as it does, I can't imagine how cool they're going to make their version of the black suit look.
Uh-huh.
So I'm stoked to see that eventually. I think it's clear as day that they have plans for that storyline in Peter's life because it hasn't been told yet in this version of his character.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever they plan to do, I have the utmost confidence in them because they nailed it with this game, with everything.
Yeah.
So very exciting to speculate on that.
Yeah. So those, I know we talked about how it was pretty I'm so sorry. I'm having such a hard time talking.
It's okay.
Very, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Predictable, I guess, as you were saying, mm-hmm. like, especially the first half, but that ending with Harry, you know, being there the entire time and that treatment, that was a surprise to me. And, Aunt May's death, we haven't talked about that yet. That genuinely surprised me and was very emotional to me. Entire scene just had just everything that, you know, Peter's been through, just, you know, with Uncle Ben and everything. And his like his literal last. I mean, I'm assuming that's like his last relative on Earth, right there. I think
so, unless they're going the route with his parents, where they're agents that happen to still be alive because he finds that picture in one of his backpacks. Like, oh man, my parents. We're always going places or whatever he says.
I mean, I'm going to assume they're dead.
I kind of hope they are. I've never been interested in the idea. Peter's parents are secret agents. Who gives a shit?
That entire, like, in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, that just plot line with his parents just so dumb. Like, I could not have cared less.
I was never into it at all.
Yeah. Just her dying was, and him, like I just said, with that being, like, his last relative and him having the cure in his hand.
Yeah, and having to make that sacrifice.
Yeah, and he thinks about it. He takes the IV and like almost sticks it in there, but just, you know, that's kind of where just like the Spider-Man part of him takes over, where he has to, you know, think about the greater good of everybody else than his own, you know, personal matters. And, you know, Aunt May would have wanted that to happen as well. Like her entire job was to take care of people. So her sacrificing herself to save, you know, thousands or, you know, hundreds of people, however many people were infected, you know, she would have, you know, done without hesitation.
Yeah.
But,
true testament to the performances as well, because they really sold that moment perfectly. And not only just the performances, but the animators as well, that are responsible for bringing the characters' faces to life and everything. I mean, you feel it and can see it, and it is practically flawless in the delivery, and that's why it's so effective, I think. Yeah. And the writing, of course.
And that emotion hits more, especially coming after this Doc Ock battle, where Peter finds out that you know, Octavius knew he was Spider-Man the entire time, and even knowing that he's like messing with Peter Parker, he still was fine with him being, you know, a casualty if he gets what he wants. Mm-hmm. And you know, Peter, you know, with Uncle Ben being dead and him having no father figure, like, you know, he completely, you know, like he's, I think he even says he idolized, you know, Octavius. Mm-hmm. And for him to, you know, willingly try and kill Peter, I mean, tried to blow him up in his freaking headquarters, you know. Yeah. And you know actively tried to kill him at the you know, the end of the game. You know, having a, you know, like I said, a father figure to him, just, you know, again, trying to kill him, just that whole, like, just that, dynamic.
It's very
right
Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker at the end.
I really liked it. And that entire sequence when you're on the side of the building was just so freaking cool.
Yeah, it is truly awesome.
Yeah. Visually. Gameplay-wise, I'll get to that in a little second.
It was pretty laid-back gameplay-wise. Visually, and in terms of story and visually, it was really cool.
Oh, yeah. Just that the anti-ox suit on top of Oscorp Tower with it raining and stuff, just absolutely gorgeous game. Holy crap, that game is so good-looking. Mm-hmm. I'll talk a little bit, just since we were talking about that. I don't want to talk about it too much, but that's probably my only complaint for the game, like gameplay wise is, like, you know, the swing's perfect. I really love the combat. The combat is way deeper than you think it is, just using all, especially as you start fighting like Sable agents and stuff. Like, once it gets, you know, the difficulty ramps up, just you're having to use your gadgets and stuff. So I think the combat is freaking awesome. The swing's obviously awesome. The stealth is cool. I thought the boss fights were a little, visually really cool, just a little mechanically lackluster. It's pretty much the exact same thing for every boss. You either throw something at them or just web them up and go do your four hit combo and then, you know, swing away before they can attack again.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish there were a few more mechanics in these boss fights to make them, you know, just a little more just in depth, not, you know, as samey as they were. But
for sure,
I
get it too. I mean, it amazes me that the game's quality wise at the level it's at, and they only spent 3 years developing it. I mean, that is truly mind-blowing. That was only, it looks like a game that's in development for at least 5 years, and this is coming from someone who knows very, very little about game development. So that blew my mind, that fact alone. And then Brian mentioning, it was either kind of funny spoiler cast or IGN's, where he mentioned they had plans for more of the Sinister Six, but just due to time constraints, they couldn't pull it off. Now, I think it's safe to assume we'll see more of those villains going forward.
Yeah.
But I'll talk about, like you said, the pros and cons of those boss fights. Like you said, visually, so cool. And I love the idea. I think Brian says this too. I'm pulling a lot from what Brian says to reference things, because I think it kind of brings things into more of a better perspective, understanding why they are the way they are. And I like, in terms of the story, this being a Spider-Man 8 years into his career, fighting just one of them at one time would seem like nothing to him. Kind of like Fisk at the beginning, where you just totally own him. I like how he takes on two bosses at a time. Just makes total sense in the story. It looks cool. It's exciting to play through. But again, I would have liked more mechanics too had they had the time. It'd been cool, for example, with Electro, maybe instead of just straight up webbing him and fighting him, you have to deal with the environment somehow, how he's traversing around with his electricity. Maybe you have to web up some, I don't know, some wires or some outlets or something before you attack him, or maybe water comes into play somehow. I don't know. But maybe that'd be like a Sandman fight. I mean, we'll talk about cool possibilities for other villains that weren't even in the game or hinted at in the game too. But yeah, something to bring those fights mechanically, like you mentioned, to life more. But I wasn't bored by them at all. I really did genuinely enjoy them. I just liked, like I said, being in the presence of those villains and taking in the world around me. And this new version of Spider-Man we're seeing in him quipping back and forth with these guys. So I liked a lot about them, but I totally get where you're coming from with how every boss fight felt a little samey, but I still enjoyed them nonetheless.
No, yeah. And probably the big two that stick out to me was Vulture and Electro, because there wasn't really a build up to fighting them. You kind of just swing over there and you fight them, and the fight's over. Mm-hmm. And that's the last you see of them. Or at least Scorpion, he had an entire mission where he poisons you and you have to, you know, swing through the city, you know, on drugs pretty much, and fight like hallucinations of him and stuff. And then the Rhino kind of had a build up playing as, you know, Miles escaping him. So there was like, you know what I mean? There was a little build up to that actual boss fight that I liked. But like I said, I think Vulture and Electro kind of got the shaft, because it was just over so quick.
It was. In regard to the Scorpion Rhino fight, I think that was one of the top three moments that felt like classic Spider-Man to me. Just hearing not only Scorpion and Rhino argue with each other during the whole fight, but Spider-Man joking around with them, and just that little cargo area just felt like a classic Spider-Man area in the city to me.
Yeah,
fighting them, I just had a lot of fun with that boss fight. Just in terms of story and visuals, again, but again, pretty easy fight. But I thought it was just really, really fun nonetheless.
Yeah. No, so. For sure.
How'd you feel about the Shocker fight? Did we talk about that?
Oh, the Shocker fight? I completely forgot about that. I mean, it was...
Yeah, he seems kind of... I won't say pointless. I think they kind of needed just a boss to throw there in the beginning. Just be like, oh, it's a boss fight, and it's Shocker. He's classic first villain you typically deal with.
You gotta have Shocker in your Spider-Man game.
And like, I guess Martin Lee had hired him to rob the bank, essentially. Yeah. That was the story, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was cool. I still enjoyed that
fight.
Was
it Martin Lee? Or was it Doc Ock?
Or was it Doc Ock? Yeah, it may have been. I can't remember.
Yeah, maybe on New Game Plus, we'll catch like things in the story more, you know, as we go through it again.
So before we move on from the Sinister Six, I think...
It has to be Martin Lee, because he said something about, like, killing him or something, and why would you be threatened by...
Yeah, and I think at that point in the story, Doc Ock hadn't even... considered doing anything.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't exactly
sinister,
sure.
I should say.
Cause I went back to his to get the final trophy I needed, was to do all those puzzles in his lab. And he had in like whiteboard and stuff, like plans to do all this stuff, and Peter made a remark saying like, holy crap, like he's been planning on this for like a long time. So I don't know how long it was. But I think they just made a point that he had this rage, you know, obviously against Osborn, you know, ever since that, you know, the incident happened with Martin Lee, I guess. So I don't know who knows how long, you know, into the story he was planning to do all this stuff.
I like that feud between Norman and Osborn too, how they were lab partners and kind of had a falling out. Norman may or may not have stolen Otto's ideas for certain things. I liked that relationship they had, and that disdain Otto had for Norm, and you could really feel that too again in the performance and the writing. So
yeah,
that was pretty cool. And that's what I was going to say about not only Otto, but even Norman and Spider-Man and Mary Jane. Everyone in the story has very clear and believable motivations as to why they're doing what they're doing. And specifically, one of my favorite parts was exploring Otto's hideout in that building.
Yeah,
where all of the gear of the Sinister Six was laid out, and you could read or listen to what Otto had to say to each of them about why they were helping Otto. Uh-huh. I liked how Electro's motivation was he wanted to be fully electrified.
Pure energy.
And pure energy. And Otto's like, I can help you achieve that. I know how to do it. So that was kind of Electro's motivation. Rhino had been trapped in his suit and wanted to get out of it. Otto could help him with that. Vulture has cancer and Otto can alleviate that somehow. Who else is in there? Scorpion.
Needed his records cleared, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So I liked that a lot. And what was Martin Lee's motivation?
Because
I know they were working together.
I think just to get to Norman. They both hated Norman.
That's right. They both had that same hatred for Norman. And
yeah,
wanted their
Norman
revenge,
turned on Ock, and Norman was responsible for, you know, Lee's death of Lee's parents and everything.
Yeah, and in terms of Norman, his motivation with Devil's Breath was purely to cure his son.
Yeah.
So despite of his arrogant personality he has for the public in a way, I think it's almost like a mask he's wearing to shield his pain and his suffering dealing with not only the loss of his wife, but now the potential death of his son.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing, you know, obviously bad things and stuff, but, you know, he's doing whatever it takes to save his son.
Right, which I think is very cool.
I really like that nobody is just being malevolent for the sake of just like, yeah, like I'm a villain.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
totally.
Everybody, you know, has, reasons that you can, you know, see, you can sympathize with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, like, freaking killing, you know, people in a suicide bomb is not the way, you know, to do it, but, you know, he has a reason. The only thing about that, I think I talked to you about it last night, I wish they would have gone more in depth with Martin Lee, like the whole demon connection thing, his whole power situation. I'm not really sure, he's Mr.
Negative.
Like
it's in there. I just didn't really consume it as well as I could. I may have been a little distracted.
Either I completely missed it, or because I was trying listening and trying to read everything, and I even Googled it, and on Wikipedia it said that there's no like true really origin story for Mr. Negative.
Because I know he's a relatively new character. I think he's only been around for 5 or 6 years.
For how long?
5 or 6 years.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, he's pretty new. So I think from what I gather, there's a demon that possesses him. And in order to satisfy that demon, he has to do those, which is silly as it sounds, those negative things that feed that negative energy.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember because Spider-Man obviously finds out about this and essentially figures out how to get him out of it. But it's all about like pure willpower, I think, from Martin Lee to overcome that demon. And it's kind of a cool allegory for just personal demons, his character, but it's like a literal personified version of a personal demon that causes him to do these terrible things.
Yeah.
But let's talk about his boss fights.
I'm not sure what I read. I thought I read something saying he didn't have like an origin story, but so apparently
he's had that demon since he was a kid.
A crewman on a slave ship was the sole survivor of the wreck. He assumed the identity of Martin Lee, one of the slaves. After he became the victim of experiments from Silvermane, he gained a split personality, calling himself Mr. Negative. Only his villainous side remembered he wasn't Martin Lee. His powers are he has the ability to turn people evil. Or even good, the ability to generate a sword made from dark force energy. His hobby is he enjoys playing a Chinese board game with himself.
Nice.
He has the ability to change to form between a normal human, his negative body energy, and that body he can control and emit black light and the kind of electrical energy used in photograph negatives.
Huh. Are you reading this on the internet right now?
Yeah.
Villains. I wonder what his bio says on the actual character bio in the game.
In the
read
game,
it yet.
I'm not seeing that here.
There might be some answers there.
Yeah. I'll look into that.
Let's talk about his boss fights. I think his first boss fight in the train station was, I think his Grand Central Station. That was pretty awesome to me, set piece wise. I like how it starts from the train station.
Oh, yeah, the first one. Yeah, that was cool.
I think I like the first one more than the second one, honestly. I like the, because that kind of had some mechanics too. You have to dodge those incoming wave attacks inside the train and push him back. And just cutscene wise too, the transitions in between the environments was super cool. And I like how you end up in that truck chase at the end and fight him on the side of the truck. And then I think he possesses you. And where do you fight him when he possesses you again?
Mr. Negative?
I can't remember at when he possesses you. When you're on the side of the truck and he possesses you for a second.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you are. You're just following him after, I kind of forgot what leads up to that point.
Because I know it's the Mary Jane mission where you're playing as her and Spider-Man's creeping around taking guys out for you.
Inside the train station?
Yeah.
That's not when he possesses you for the first time.
I'm saying when you chase him out of the train station, you're hanging on the side of the truck and he grabs you and you become possessed and you transport somewhere and fight him again. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, I mean, the second time you fight him is at the very end before Doc Ock and the...
Yeah, and he's that big demon.
Yeah.
But I know when you're chasing him on that truck, he touches you and you have that vision and you fight him somewhere for a minute. I just can't remember where it's at.
I don't remember. I remember that happening. Yeah. I don't know where it's at, though.
Mm-hmm. But I really did like that fight a lot. It was a cool set piece. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites in the game, for sure.
For sure.
What are we missing here? I know there's something else in there we haven't talked about. Spoiler wise.
There's just a lot of villains that they allude to. Like, I think Sandman and Mysterio, Lizard. Just pretty much every classic villain.
I think it'd be great to open with Lizard in the next one.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Like an opening, kind of like with Fisk, but an opening boss dealing with Lizard. And maybe it's like a subplot. Maybe we're trying to help Dr. Connors deal with his Lizard issue. Yeah. I don't know.
Fisk kind of takes you kind of don't even like talk to him after the first act. I just thought of that right now.
I like what Brian said about Fisk. He said they wanted the opening to be the end of another story, which it totally felt like that. It seemed like the final battle of Peter's story with Fisk, like this big arc he had with Fisk, where he wakes up and goes to take him out finally. I thought that was kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. So from what I read for Mr. Negative, this was obvious, but just his good side obviously made Feast, and just with Fisk being broken down, his evil side just could not ignore just like the power gap, and he like just had to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously explained in the story, but that's all I can really see in a wiki that I see for the game's Mr. Negative. So I don't know, maybe we'll get more, hopefully we'll get more backstory. Nice. What was I saying? Oh yeah, about Fisk, the other villains. Oh yeah. So what do you think, spoiler wise, Black Cat is in the game? Mm-hmm. She kind of just leads you on a goose chase,
it's a kitty cat chase.
Yeah. You get a pretty cool suit once you find her hideout.
That is pretty cool. But very kind of her to supply that.
Yeah, it was. I know we're obviously seeing her in the bank heist or whatever it's called DLC, but, based on the remaining two DLCs after completing the game, what are you thinking that they could, you know, possibly be?
Because
I can tell you the name of them. They are called...
No, the first one's called The Heist, isn't it?
Yeah, The Heist. I don't know why I said The Bank Heist or something. The Heist, then there is one called Turf Wars in November, and then in December, Silver Lining. So I think Silver Lining obviously probably has to do something with Silver Sable.
Maybe. I don't know if it's that literal or if it's a silver lining to another plot line, like something bad that happened. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Silver Lining, I mean, it's a comic book game. That would make sense. I don't know if it's that literal or not.
I would like to see more stuff with Silver Sable because we haven't talked about that at all, about her character.
Yeah,
they kind of just, I mean, nothing really happens with her. She just turns like over. It's like she, do you convince her? It's kind of just like after everything that's going on, you guys team up before you go fight Mr. Lee. And
yeah, I think she finally realizes that Spider-Man's on the right side, yeah, dealing with the situation.
Yeah, so she's just like, I gotta, you know, take a break from all of this. So I'd be up for a DLC kind of, you know, going more in depth with her. I don't know what they could really do about it, but I was, you know, I liked her as a character. I thought she was pretty cool. So I'd be fine with having some more content with her.
I'm hoping they reserve additional villains like Mysterio, Sandman, Lizard, and everyone for future games, if not just the next games. I'd hate to see them succumb to just DLC. It'd be cool to see them pop up, if anything, but I want them to be more fleshed out in a full game. But, I don't know what the middle one could be. It sounds like gangsters to me. Maybe there's a gangster-like character. I doubt it would be Tombstone again, obviously, but Hammerhead. Maybe some other type of Hammerhead. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be interesting.
I'd kind of be into that, I think.
Yeah.
It'd be a great time to introduce that costume I really want from Spider-Man on PS1 with those old textures and everything. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I kind of like that in Tomb Raider, as a side note, those old character models you can use as costumes.
Yeah. That is cool.
Not that I would ever actually use them for more than 5 minutes, but it's cool that it's in there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know these DLCs add, I believe Brian said multiple villains. So hopefully, I would love to just see like a bunch more, like the kind of lesser villains, like a Sandman or just something, you know, like that.
Still there?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. It just sounded like you just cut off mid-sentence.
Yeah, sometimes that happens in Discord.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be down for that for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm trying to think of any other spoilers we have not discussed.
Him and Mary Jane smooch at the end.
Yeah, so they're kiss. Back together.
Yeah, that's.
So I doubt we'll see any anything sensual. I mean, maybe sensual. I don't think anything blatantly physical between Black Cat and Spider-Man, considering Spider-Man is now back with Mary Jane.
I mean, but Black Cat's whole thing is she wants to kind of seduce Spider-Man.
Right.
So I'm sure we'll see something along those lines. I wonder if this DLC will take place after the story or if it's just like takes place during the story, you know?
That's a good question, considering I want to play New Game Plus, and I imagine New Game Plus will land. I think it's going to land in the next week or two, New Game Plus. I think it'll come before the DLC. I'd like to just jump into that DLC mid New Game Plus if I can.
We've talked about pretty much everything, but one of the other main things is Miles Morales getting his powers. Just what is your outlook on just the future of this franchise with Miles having powers? Like, do you think that the next game we could be potentially controlling both of them with both of them having different powers for different missions?
I think that's very safe to assume from a gameplay standpoint, because as we discussed, I'm not an expert on Miles Morales. The only two powers I know for a fact he has are invisibility, which was hinted at before he even gets bit by the spider in the game. That's when I kind of knew it was coming for sure, is when Mary Jane was investigating. She's like, oh, this spider can turn invisible.
Yeah,
I figured that'd be the one that bites him. But yeah, he has that, and he has like a poison sting or venomous sting he can use, which I don't know how that functions. But he has that, so I think it's safe to assume we will control him in the next game. I think it could go a number of ways, but obviously they're going to maintain and expand upon that mentor-mentee relationship that Spider-Man or Peter Parker and Miles have. I don't know if the next game will start with Miles as an established sidekick to Spider-Man, with them working together in some ways, or if he'll just be getting used to his powers and Spider-Man will be sort of coaching him along while they do that. It'll probably be one or two ways like that. I mean, you and I don't want them to kill Spider-Man at some point or Peter and have Miles Morales take over like a Red Dead situation. But I don't know if they'll do that or not, but we'll definitely be seeing plenty of Miles in the next game. So that's pretty much my only thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I love the ending, though. I love that after credits scene where Miles reveals his powers to Peter, and Peter's like, oh, it's not that weird, and they both hang from the ceiling.
That was a cool scene.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Mary Jane? Like, I hadn't really thought about it until I listened to the spoiler cast, but people were making the Lois Lane comparisons, which is totally true.
Yeah.
But I still really like this version of Mary Jane. It's probably my favorite iteration of Mary Jane. Again, just her passion and her motivation for her work and why she's motivated to do what she's doing. And not only just for the greater good of the city, but also to help Peter as well.
Uh-huh.
So I like that. I think it was someone in the kind of funny spoiler cast made a great point in regard to Mary Jane and Peter trusting each other, with her jumping off that building out of Norman's place, expecting Spider-Man to catch her, and then Spider-Man also trusting her enough to go in there by herself after that certain point in the story. So it really did a really good job of building their relationship and them earning each other's trust. I mean, not that it wasn't already there, but just really beginning to trust each other and kind of fall back into a relationship toward the end of the game. So their whole arc throughout the game from start to finish was just really solid. And some of my favorite moments were when he was in her apartment and obviously tries to leave in his costume. She's like, you leave your clothes on the floor. And he does that funny thing where he picks them up before he leaves. And then I think my favorite moment is when they're texting, when he's jumping around the rooftops, all flustered about their conversation via text, which was totally relatable too. I thought it was great. So their relationship was very well done. And I love the Lois Lane approach to her character. And I heard someone else say that whoever makes a Superman game is going to have a hard time with Lois Lane now, because now people are going to be like, we've seen this in Spider-Man already.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting, but I loved it. I thought it was really, really great.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, sequel-wise, I'd prefer to avoid playing as Mary Jane again, unless they really give her something interesting to do aside from just sneaking around.
Give her spider powers, too.
Yeah, totally. Instead of Spider-Gwen, it'll be Spider Mary Jane.
Yeah, Spider Jane.
Yeah. That's what everyone wants.
Yes.
So, well, I don't know. I think we've covered everyone.
Yeah, I think unless I'm completely forgetting something, which I don't think I am.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess in a conclusion, I can say once this, you know, once I had my freak out back in 2015 or 16 when this game was released, and the game is finally come and gone, and I can say it is it did exceed my expectations. It was everything and more that I hoped an Insomniac Spider-Man game could be, and I absolutely cannot wait for a sequel.
Likewise, I think you and I were talking about it. I think it's safe to assume earliest 3 years from now, latest 4 to 5. I hope they take longer with it. I want them to pour their hearts and souls into the sequel as much as they did with this
one. The good
thing
is they already have the mechanics down. They know they just have to improve on the swinging, maybe add a few more moves. You know, they don't have to start from scratch from a lot of things. They can just...
Yes, they have a very firm foundation to build upon, for sure.
Yeah.
You and I talked about how are they going to tackle the city, because I still love the city. I'm not bored of it. But considering how much more I plan to swing around before the sequel even comes out, between New Game Plus and DLC, and just when I'm bored and feel like swinging around for a bit, how will they make the city interesting? Is that you can't totally change it, because it would just make no sense in the story why New York is totally rearranged. And there's only so many ways you can make it New York City. And I think they really nailed it. I think New York is practically flawless to traverse, so why would they change much of it? But you got to think of how they will build upon the city itself. I think a lot of that will have to do with maybe the time of year, maybe the weather, maybe different things that happen to the city. Like Brian makes a good point in saying the city changes throughout the game, with the Sable outpost appearing, the escaped prisoner outpost that appear, the dystopia it becomes once Devil's Breath is released and people firing at you and it's in total chaos. So that kind of keeps it interesting and fresh throughout the course of the game. I think that will play a role in the sequel. More things to do around the open world. I think it's safe to assume we might see burning buildings in the next one. Like, oh, go into the burning building and save people. And how will they make that interesting? That may not be what they do, but more things to do, more ways to save people around the city, more animations to swinging. I think one would be really cool is if you attach to something like, say, a thin beam or like a construction beam or like a pole sticking out, like a flagpole sticking off the side of a building, being able to swing from that and loop around it for maybe a boost. If you loop around it, it launches you even further as an animation. That'd be kind of cool. Stuff like that. But like we said, great, great starting point to build off of. And they can only go up from here, which is exciting. So, and even the things that they recognize they could have done more with, I think they will fully address in the sequel. And although I believe Spider-Man PS4 is a near perfect package, I think the next one will truly be the ultimate experience. And again, I this is everything, like we said, it is a dream come true. It's everything we've ever wanted in a Spider-Man game. And the minor nitpicks that people have, I think, will be fully addressed in the sequel, and we can be nothing but excited for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that we've both platinumed it, done everything you can do. Of course, again, New Game Plus, DLC, excited for it, but considering the 3-year hype buildup we had and then experiencing all of it so quickly, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I loved every moment I spent with it. I've played it for over 40 hours. It's amazing how things come and go like that so quickly.
Yep, for sure.
So, yeah, I think we've about covered everything, haven't we?
Yeah, I believe so. We have any community questions?
We do. Let me see what we have and haven't read here. Let me take a gander real quick. We did the London one. I think we have two new ones.
Okay.
Just kidding. We don't.
Okay.
Okay. We have one new one.
All right.
I think I have a couple from a couple weeks ago I can pull from.
I mean, it's
fine. Yeah. By the way, this is Ask IRG.
Relatively soon anyway. So.
Yeah. This community questions. Thank you guys so much for your continued support of this podcast. I know we've kind of been MIA for a little while on YouTube and Discord, and we're still doing the podcast, obviously, but even with streaming, we've been lacking a bit, and you guys have heard this a million times. We're just very busy with our individual things going on that we are committed to, but the podcast will live on to the end of our days, hopefully. But regardless of our lack of quote-unquote content, brah, and our interaction on the interwebs, we appreciate the continued support of you not only listening but commenting on the YouTube channel if you're willing. And also supplying us with community questions. And if you want your questions read on this show publicly, on air, you can reach us in one of three places. You can email us at itsobviousgaming@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at @obvious_gaming. Or submit your questions in the Ask IOG section of our Discord channel. All that being said, if you want your questions read aloud, always include the hashtag #AskIOG. And it will happen. Like Bear Commando did here in Discord. He writes in and says, "Hey guys, what's your opinion on curved computer monitors? Been thinking about getting a pair as my current monitors are about 6 to 8 years old. I only do 1080p gaming currently, so prices aren't a huge issue. Thanks, and God bless y'all." Well, God bless you as well, Bear Commando, and for your willingness to supply us with a community question. Preston, do you have any experience with curved monitors? Curved swords.
Yeah, I've had experience with curved TVs and monitors, and I mean, they're cool. I think the monitors are cooler than the TVs because you're actually closer to it. So it's kind of like a, obviously it doesn't like wrap around your head, but it kind of gives you the illusion of like giving you a wrap around your face kind of. Whereas a TV, it's just kind of, personally, it's weird, especially if you have like a bunch of people over trying to watch it from like different angles and stuff. It's just a little odd. But for a monitor, I think they're cool. I don't think they're really like it's not like a different experience or anything. I think it's if you just think it's cool, then go for it. That's all I really have to say.
I have nothing to add.
They're cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What is it? I heard those men from Redguard have curved penises. And Three Dog walks in. He's like, "What does he say? You're damn right," or something. I can't remember what he says.
I haven't watched Gamer Poop in forever.
Yeah, that is hilarious. All right, 2018 August. Let's see what we have here. I'll do one or two more if I can find them. That won't work. Jacob's not here. We can't do that. Oh, we already did the what are you going to name your horse in Red Dead. We did that. I think we may be out of luck today.
That's fine. That's perfectly fine. Well, yeah, send more questions, like Garrett said, to our Discord channel. Email us. Check the description down below to figure out how to do that. I think that'll do it for this week, though, Garrett.
Yeah, I think it will, too. I was going to say, everyone, please leave your thoughts on and any spoiler topics on Spider-Man PS4 in the comments below. Love to talk to you about it. And continue it on Discord, of course. Now we have a spoiler section for that. But in terms of YouTube in and of itself, if you're willing to throw some comments our way, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, dude, sounds good. Oh, my gosh. Oh, sorry if this was a miscombobulated podcast. I'm so tired. Had a hard time getting my thoughts together. But nonetheless, I really enjoyed talking to you about Spider-Man and other things.
Likewise, my friend.
So,
Hey, one last thing before we go that we have failed to mention twice for some reason.
What?
The music in the game is unbelievably fantastic. Oh, yeah. It is so freaking good. And I love the multiple themes throughout the game, the way they change throughout the game, the way they trigger when you're web swinging and even in combat and everything. I think I wanted to say, like I mentioned when I made that original web swinging video for COG, I got slightly emotional because not only is that musical so beautiful, but it sounds like dreams coming true. Like we said, dreams do come true. And I think even beyond video games, things like this happening, as silly as it sounds, because it is a video game, I think it's okay to dream big because your dreams can come true. And I think the score of Spider-Man PS4 is what that sounds like. I think it perfectly personifies what dreams sound like when they come true. And that's why I was so emotional, because we've waited so long and dreamt of a Spider-Man game like this. And that music just sounds like that happening. So it's so beautiful. I love it so much. And yeah, that's all I have to say. I just wanted to mention that because we'd failed to mention it twice. It's excellent.
For sure. I completely agree.
Yeah.
So,
but I think that's it from us, finally.
All right. Cool, man. Sounds good. Well, thanks for talking to me, Garrett. And thanks for the listeners for listening again. We really appreciate it. And again, please check the description down below for every way to get in contact with us. Please subscribe to the channel at youtube.com/itsobviousgaming and subscribe to the podcast over on the Apple Podcast app. That we would appreciate that very much, and it helps us out tremendously. But I guess that will do it for today, and I look forward to talking to you and y'all again next week.
Likewise, everyone have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Bye-bye.